Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Now then, you two. I've been hearing all this about whether you should iron your underpants or not. Now, this be old grey whiskers, and if I don't iron my underpants, they get all crinkly round the knees. So, I gotta iron them. And then when I does iron them, they got so all crinkly round the bum. Now, can anyone tell me how's the best way to iron a decent pair of long johns so they don't get crinkly round the bum or round the knees? That would be a great help. Thank you very much. I'll sign off for now then. Bye-bye.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Your Honor.
This is Dumpty Dum, sponsored by managers.
Lancaster Thursday Gregson session.
Folks, this is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that are centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the tasty dinner that is Royfield Brown, and with me have the squash Wellington that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Krusty and Phillips' non-romance, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum comes from Fiona Frank and the Thursday session. It's probably, well, no probably about it. I say it's the most accomplished Dumpty Dum we've ever had. In terms of people getting together on a Thursday and just bashing it out. What do you reckon, Lucy?
Yes, absolutely. No, absolutely. And it also makes me want to sing to the tune, which considering I've now heard the tune 852 million times, the fact that I still want to sing to it just shows what a good version it was.
And it just shows you what a wonderful thing the whole world of Ambridge actually is, because in these terrible times of coronavirus, basically...
Yep.
That is going to save your life, folks. Just saying. Hum that for the duration while you're washing your hands, and your hands will be sanitised and all clean. There'll be no coronavirus on them, so you'll be able to live. That's the power of the archers.
Yeah.
Life Dumpty and death.
Dump. Saving lives since
1951. January the 1st. Yes. Now, one thing which will also help save your life is if you keep free this date, May 16th, Dumpty Dum Live will be in London.
Yes, it will save your life, because if you don't come, we will kill you. So there we go.
There you go. Right. That is one public gathering which the government are allowing. Dumpty Dum Live.
Yeah. So it's the only one, in fact. Everything else is shut. Only that.
Absolutely. Oh, there is another little public gathering which Boris Johnson and his cronies are allowing you to attend. That is drinks on April the 2nd.
Oh, yes, and also that one.
Yes, yeah, there are two. There are two, Lucy. Yeah. And here is a little message about that.
Greetings, Earthlings. Andrew Horn here. Just a little admin note. Drinks Thursday, 2nd of April, still on. Central London, still on. I'd hoped to confirm a venue near Oxford Circus, but the manager was off last week. So I will try and get to that sorted this week and get back to you. But keep it in your diaries. See you there. Bye.
All right. So.
Did you just mutter Corona halfway through that? Such a child.
I know.
And I'm such a child for laughing equally. So there we go.
Well, if you can't laugh about these things, what can you do?
What can you just wait till you die? That's what you can do.
In
wait
it, till though. You die. Exactly. Right. So,
I'll tell you what, I was in the gym this morning.
I beg your pardon.
I was in the gym this morning.
I didn't know you went to the gym.
Well, there you go. Life is full of surprises, Royfield. Mm. And there was two ladies swimming up and down, and one said to the other one, I'll tell you what it is, it's all them Italians that don't wash their hands, she said. That was the whole reason for coronavirus, is Italian people not washing their hands. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, and then there were three old chaps in the corner, in the cafe bit, talking about people hoarding loo roll.
Mm.
And they were very nice old gentlemen, or appeared to be. They're drinking their coffee. And one said, did you see Joyce, somebody down their road, apparently. Joyce in got in a Barney in Waitrose because she was trying to buy too many loo rolls. Mm. And one of the older gentlemen said, well, she does have a big arse, so maybe she uses a fair bit of it. Absolutely extraordinary. So there we are. It's people with big asses. It's their fault.
Mm.
And the Italians. Italians with big asses. It's probably, you could probably narrow it down to one Italian with a big ass who's caused all of this fuss.
Well, the whole thing of cleanliness, countries and cultures and cleanliness, it's very geographically kind of like specific, isn't it? Because generally it's the country next door that says the other countries that they're dirty buggers,
filthy dirty they are.
Yeah. And the one thing which I remember from when I first started going to Europe in the 90s was us Brits have a real bad reputation when it comes to cleanliness. Especially the Italians. The Italians just think, oh, we're the worst. There's no bidets. How can they be clean? Just saying. Right. Anyway, it just came to mind. I don't know why. Anyway, there's some stuff in red, Lucy, and you're on the clock today, so you best chop up.
I am.
Chop on. Get on.
Chop on.
Chop on.
Chop on. If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum or leave us a plot prediction, then call us on 0203 031 3105, or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thank you to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Mike Hatton for his character counts, Shambridge for her voices, and to Derek for Load of the Back Bedroom. Derek and Auntie Cardboard have self-quarantined themselves at the Laurels. They've kept themselves busy in the games room playing snooker. He was trying to sink the pink, but she distracted him by fiddling with his balls through the pocket.
Well done, Mucky Freeman. Right, folks, on this week's episode, we calls from... Right, Lucy. Okay.
What?
You haven't put in who goes. I've got it.
Okay,
I've got it.
I can hold this down.
Chill.
All right.
Iris, all right. Christopher, Witherspoon, Ben, Merlin, Marda, Babs and Trev. Some controversial comments coming out from Trev in this week's call, actually. Not happy about that. And Carolyn. But first, before all of that, is our Lucy and her week in Ambridge.
We began the week with Robert and Lindy Bottom. A week later, and I'm still no clearer how old Mungo is, he did a drawing of birds in trees, which took a bit of figuring out, apparently, but he didn't stop talking about what a lovely time he'd had trekking around the nature reserve. So now I'm completely lost. He's either a really dense infant or a terrifically precocious toddler. Well, it matters not a jot, because we won't hear from him until he turns up in Ambridge when he's 17 and gay and proceeds to seduce Henry or something. Good luck with that, Mungo. Over at the Bull, Jeline was hanging a banner announcing the open ceremony of the Bat Ambridge. Lillian turned up as apparently despite running a busy property business single-handed, she's got hours to just pitch up and help out a pub with no customers, which already has two full-time members of staff and a barmaid. Anyway, the banner said, "Come and celebrate our insane decision." Jolene said they were trying to tempt the locals back, which made them sound like something on Spring Watch. "We left out a trail of scampi fries and some Fanta for them," she said. "We caught them on CCTV sniffing about, but then Kenton made encouraging noises at them through his megaphone and frightened them off." Talking of Kenton, he had made what sounded like a completely revolting cocktail. Cranberry juice should only be used as a cure for cystitis, and even then only when mixed with vodka and Cointreau in the form of a cosmopolitan. It makes your mouth crinkle up, it's so sour, and is one of those weird drinks that makes you thirstier after you've drunk it. It was good enough for Emma and Gav, though, who both sat there giggling like idiots with cocktail umbrellas up their noses. "Can you hear a growling noise, Emma?" asked Gav. There was a clattering noise and Ed leapt out from behind a Shire's barrel. "Can I walk you home, Emma?" he said keenly. "Oh, sorry, Gav, I seem to have knocked your drink into your lap and need you in the groin there, mate." The next day, a hungover Emma called Ed over to patch up the window as Georgie had thrown Kira through it. He wasn't busy, it was fine. Ed just happened to be crouched outside the French windows of Ambridge View, tying his shoelaces when she rang. "Thanks, Ed," she said. "What would I do without you? And thanks for spending a load of money you haven't got and buying a load of revolting tat I bought, having been inspired by Pinterest and Mrs. Hinch. And thanks so much for reading to Kira. Oh, there was something else. What was it? Oh, yeah, I want a divorce. Could you pop round tomorrow and fit the glass for me? Bye!" We got shot of one whole storyline. Actually, one single solitary storyline. Johnny finally told Krusty and Linda that Freddie wasn't trying to sell him drugs. He was trying to flush his packet of spam away down the bog. So, can we let it go now? No, because we're now doing that bloody technique again where the person who wants to say a thing doesn't say it, so a misunderstanding limps on. If I've messed up and need to apologise, I begin the conversation with the words, "Look, I'm really sorry, but da 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 da. I know it's done for plotical reasons, but I am positive that it is one of the things that makes listeners want to throw objects. BBC sounds, music, radio, a shit interface and infuriating plot devices. Freddie is leaving Auntie Shula and has the dubious honour of taking the room that used to be Hannah's at number one, the Green. He will lie there under his Top Gear duvet cover, the old Top Gear, not the new one, staring up at the ceiling and wondering what that buzzing noise is coming from under the bed. What Hannah did with all those butcher's hooks in the ceiling, and whether Johnny knows which app it is that makes clothes get clean again and folded and back in your chest of drawers. Over at Gay Grables. Mr. McLeod in room 103 is complaining about moths hitting him with coat hangers. I love the fact that Roy and Oliver find it so hilarious that they clearly run a shambles of a place and all their guests hate them. No dry cleaning, the kitchen's literally full of shit, your breakfast gets cooked by a drug dealer on a primer stove in a corner of the dining room and your wardrobe's full of psychopathic moths. Krusty's worried that Philip is going off her, as he pretended to be going somewhere and really he was going somewhere else. I can see why she'd be a bit twitchy, but it's not like her wedding's not going to happen for the second time because the bridegroom has either died in a freak drains accident or had a massive heart attack due to stress, is it? Is it? Oh. Anyway, really what he was doing was finding a wedding venue, which he has done. It is a hut on top of a hill called Parker Knoll. He said it was a hill like Lakey Hill, just in case Krusty wasn't sure what a hill was. He then pointed out that there were views all the way around. Yes, that is what happens when you are on the top of a hill. That is why people climb up them. See Everest. Krusty, if he does expire before your nuptials, I'm beginning to think you'll have had a lucky escape, but don't do that screaming thing again, love, as you'll sprain something. Over at Bridge Farm, things are still as balmy as ever. Tony suddenly revealed his true colours as the world's only married incel when he declared that he was such an...
Harsh, Lucy, that's very harsh.
When he declared that he was such an unreconstructed man that when they got married, Pat did all the cooking. That's really shit having to cook at your own wedding. Anyway, he said proudly that he'd never made a cake in his life and referred to looking after his own children as babysitting. You don't walk your own dog and say you're a dog walker, Tony, you Burke. I want to know how you stayed married for 45 years, said Tom, and I think we're all beginning to wonder that, but not as keenly as Tom, whose wife only lasted a month. Now, here's the thing. I love this. When they were in a cab coming home drunk from an unsuccessful cocktail evening in which Natasha had tried to thump Tom in the face when he accidentally woke her up. Yes, it was that exciting. The happy couple had a hiccuping discussion about moving Natasha's fruit juice business to Bridge Farm. Not the trees, she said helpfully. Tom mentioned this casually to his father, who immediately said, no consultation with anyone, yes, okay, let's build an extension onto the pack house. Another extension? Bridge Farm must be the size of Windsor Castle by now. Also, we've all heard Bridge Farm have a family meeting about whether or not to buy a book of four stamps or to splash out on the six before now. But when it comes to the massive, huge financial decisions, yeah, whatever you've decided when you're trying not to hoy down the side of an Uber. So, as this madness continues, Tom also manages to lose the ring of his wife's dead uncle in a cake, which sounds like a phrase Duolingo would try and get you to translate out of Mandarin Chinese. Anyway, I'm sure it'll turn up, hopefully wedged in Natasha's esophagus. Now, as the cliffhanger of the week was Krusty saying, looks like we are going on that mini break then, which was straight out of the Crossroads playbook and has also made me hate Krusty now as she uses the word mini break. I am going to finish with something else instead. They really are a bad-tempered, awful set of self-involved monsters at Brooker's. At least once a week, someone pops out of the farmhouse and says, what are you doing? And the other person says in a surly fashion that they're doing something deeply unpleasant, like scraping the yard or licking out the septic tank. The first person says in an anguished voice, oh, but I was going to do that. And then the other person says nastily, yes, but you didn't, did you? Last week it was Ben and Josh. This week it was Ruth and David, practically word for word. Then Ruth said to Pip, well, mud sticks, talking about Josh. And Pip then repeated it back to her 2 seconds later. Have they got senile dementia or have we? Maybe it's a test. Marjorie Antipas will pop up next week and they'll see if they get any calls just to make sure we're listening. Josh took his best tractor for a day out to the market. And knowing Josh came back with two more that he hadn't paid for. And the entire family was staggered that he was not welcomed with open arms. He hasn't even been cleared yet. Look at Freddie. He can't open a packet of Tic Tacs without Linda getting him in a headlock. Yes, you are archers, but not everybody cares. Ben's birthday is coming up, and stupidly, just because his elder brother and sister and elder sister were given a car for their 18th, thought he might too. Au contraire. Oh, Ruth, isn't the barn looking smashing after all the millions of pounds we spent on it? Yes, love. I think the champagne hot tub and the remote-controlled sliding roof works really well. I'm so glad we followed our gut instincts and spent £75,000 having done a sum total of jack shit research. Don't be ridiculous, Ben. Money is a serious business and we don't have £1,500 for a car. Ben, why are you surprised? Have you not been paying attention? Ruth and David don't operate on normal parenting lines. They make Kim Kardashian look like Super Nanny. Unless you've got four legs and a tail, they are just not interested in you. Try dressing up as a cow. They'll take much more notice of you, Ben. And if nothing else, you might get a visit from the AI man. Happy birthday. The end.
Oh, triumph. Well done, Freeman. Gags, social commentary, and other stuff in there. Festooned in your monologue. Well done. Well done. Enjoyed that. Right. I don't know what... Should we just go on to calls? Because...
Yes. I'm cross about a lot of things.
You've got less than an hour,
sure,
haven't you?
Up.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Right. Lots. So we're going to do that then. Right then. Smashing. Yes. I will... do this.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
And first off, top of the shop, it's our Christopher, the man with the voice.
Hello, everybody. This is Christopher in self-isolation, or North Lanarkshire, as it's sometimes known. right, Kate and Jacob, I take your point that it's completely implausible and that they really should have no future together. But if you take my wife and I, God, that sounds like a really dodgy Bernard Manning joke. In the example of my wife and I, she's a very stylish person. I'm extremely scruffy. She's clever. I'm stupid. She likes the indoors. I like the outdoors. She wants a cat. I want a dog. And we are very much in love. So if there is hope for us, there has to be hope for Kate and Jakob. There has to be, you know. And it makes you hope, though, to tempt you to trust life again. You know that one day supporters of Celtic and Rangers might dance hand in hand down London Road. Plus, they only have to be compatible for about 35 episodes a year, which is only about 12 minutes apiece. That's easy. Even I could manage that. They are going to have a very long and very successful relationship. Just you wait and see. I listened to Iris's record and I really enjoyed it, so I listened to some more. So keep that up. That was great. Yep. I don't have anything more to say. So as my grandfather used to say, may the skin of your arse never cover a banjo. Cheerio.
Bye-bye, Christopher. Just very quickly, quick note. Such was the response from our Iris's musical ditty at the end of this week's episode that we've started a new tradition here at Dumdy Dum, which is we will play out the show to a bit of Iris's music. And this week's is a corker, just saying. Anyway, did you have anything to say to Christopher? Because his main point was that Jakob and Kate would never get it together. But yes, they would, because opposites attract. It's ebony and ivory, living together in perfect harmony. That type of, like, mushy thing. Go.
I know. Well, it's a very good point that they only have to get on for 35 episodes a year. That's true. We'd all get on if we only had to live with each other for 35 episodes of a year, wouldn't we? Yeah. Well, I applaud your optimism, Christopher. And let's face it, Kate was never going to get with anybody kind of completely normal, was she? She was always going to end up with somebody unusual, because anybody who had sort of tolerance, who had a sort of a healthy self-respect and whatever else, although I think Jakob does have that, but anybody who was just kind of we're just sane, really, would run a mile from Kate. So yeah, I can if anyone would, if the black spot had to land somewhere, then it's probably best off with Jakob. That's all I'm saying.
Well, only time will tell whether they're a marriage made in heaven. Who would have thought, Lucy, some 7 years ago, that you and I would still be banging away at it, you know, come 2020.
Beg your pardon?
You heard
me. I see. Yes. 7 years?
Think about it.
Is it?
Mm.
I don't want to think about it. That's... Right, next call.
Right. Upper, lower, east, west side. Bish, bosh, bang. Have a bit of this.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, Yoko Bernal, Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. Angus is keeping one paw in my hands to keep me from touching my face and holding the phone with his other while I talk. So I'll keep it brief today. Just a couple of points to make. First off, by the time we're all listening to this, we'll know if Tom's ring is in the cake. Well, duh, of course it is, which will mean that he will have been caught out on his dumb scheme of bandaging his finger. Hopefully Natasha will have taken it all with some humor. But please, Tom, do not take relationship advice from your father ever again. In fact, you should probably go outside the immediate family for such counsel. Next point, and I'm sure that Lucy has already said all of this, it was one thing to listen to Ed and Emma failing to communicate their feelings, but I almost became apoplectic upon hearing that scene between Linda and Freddie in which Linda couldn't get a word in edgewise to apologize.
Yes.
In between Freddie's rants. He didn't even pause to take a breath. This is not the way people talk to each other. It's as if we were listening to a spoof of The Archers. So come on, scriptwriters, enough of this plot gimmick. That's all I got today, and Angus is barking, so I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, you see, even Angus was exercised by it. They have to stop doing this. It's ridiculous. It happens such a lot, and it does not happen in real life. I don't think it even happens on any other soap opera I can think of.
Mm. Yeah.
Certainly not as often.
You are right, and there has been such a spate of it recently that there's no other way to categorise it other than it's just lazy writing. It's utterly lazy writing. I don't think that it's just unique to The Archers. I think that this is a proper trope, but we've had it so much recently that it just beggars belief. I kind of believe also that the very fact that it's kind of on radio makes it kind of like doubly annoying. Because we only have this as a way to gauge the communication. There's no visual cue. You can't see where people are actually positioned and whatever. So you always think that they're absolutely facing each other. So they would absolutely get the non-verbal cue, let alone the verbal cue, like, shut up, I'm saying something, listen to me, I'm trying to apologise. It is incredibly annoying. Incredibly annoying.
She could have just butted right in and said, I'm sorry, I know, I'm sorry. You know, and if you say that, the other person stops talking.
Exactly.
Because you're saying what they want to hear. Mm. And she started it off by saying, Freddie, she didn't start off by saying, and like I said in my monologue, she didn't start off by saying, Freddie, I want to talk to you. I'm really sorry that I da-da-da-da-da. She started off by saying, I appreciate how hard you've worked to, you know, rehabilitate yourself, which just gave him, you know, pushed the door open for him to start ranting about how much he's, you know, trying and all that stuff.
He's very trying.
And, oh no, poor little me. But it just didn't clang right. It clanged really wrongly that it was, that she didn't start off by saying,
wait a minute, Lucy, can anything clang right? Surely clang.
No, I know, that's why I said it's a negative. Clanged wrong. I changed it to clanged wrongly. But also when, and then when she was despairing with Shula and everything, I can't do anything right, blah blah blah. Linda is a writer. Linda writes entire plays. She writes news pieces. Why doesn't she just send a letter to him? She can drop it through his door. She lives about 100 bloody yards away. If he won't listen to her when she talks, write him a letter.
Mm.
You know, it's absolute bollocks, this, and I'm fed up with it.
Oh, wow.
And so was Angus. He was.
Yeah, Angus didn't like it one little bit, did he?
No.
Poor little pooch. All right, so that was Witherspoon. Now we have another call. This person is called something, and I forgot to name their clip, so I'm just going to press the button, and all will be revealed.
Hello, everyone in Dumpty Dumland. Ah, this is Merlin speaking from New Jersey, and looks like I'm going to be from New Jersey for a little bit longer, as all our travel seems to have been cancelled. Witherspoon gave us a shout-out last weekend, which was nice, last week. Actually, our head office used to be in Summit, which he mentioned, so I've visited there a number of times, but our head office has now moved to Madison. So I live in Chester, not Princeton as he guessed, but not too far off. And he mentioned Morristown, which I drive through every day. So, yep, fairly good knowledge of the area. And on to The Archers. Oh, the Ring Saga. Not quite as good as Wagner. But yes, the Ring Saga, straight out of farce. And although it's obvious what's happened to the ring, they seem to be dragging it out longer than they do some of the more serious subjects. So hopefully they'll just get that over and done with quickly so we can forget about that particular one. And the other thing is the love-in everyone has had with Ben recently, saying how wonderful he is, this lovely boy and everything like that. Well, hopefully now we can see he suffers from exactly the same entitlement as Pip and Josh and expects everything. So we're back to a normal Archers family situation. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for listening. And I'll speak to you next week.
Bye.
Merlin, I've got big love for you, sir. However, I couldn't disagree more about our Ben. Number one, he is 18 or soon to be 18. So he's hardly a fully formed adult. And the youngest child of a family always complains about being forgotten, overlooked, etc. And that's exactly what's happened here. Now, the last time I kind of like looked at things and stuff, looked at my children's birthdays, they come around at the same time every year. So you have time to plan. And the one thing I would never...
Wilford, are you serious? They come around the same time every year.
They do. They do, Lucy.
I know they do. It's their birthdays.
Exactly. You know, so how is this a surprise for Ruth and David?
Yeah.
Let alone it's their 18th, it's the boy's 18th. And they've set a precedent, rightly or wrongly, and another caller does mention this later, rightly or wrongly, they've set a precedent of you get a car. You know, dug themselves a hole there. Now, the other thing that I would say as well is Ruth banging on about saying we're really overdrawn at the moment with the business account. What's that got to do with the personal account?
Yeah.
The two shouldn't be linked at all.
No.
So I'm sorry. If I was Ben, I'd be pissed, right? If he gets a box of Toblerone and a cherry's chocolate orange and a handshake for his birthday and his two siblings have had cars... I'm sorry, you'd be pissed.
Yeah.
Should they be buying their children cars for their birthdays?
Well, even Pip is saying it's not really fair.
Because it's not.
It's not.
I don't understand how any reasonable adult could actually look at this and go, built a rod for your backs there, Ruth and David. You have to just follow through.
Yeah.
And this is no surprise. You've known for 18 years that this day was going to come, and you've known for 365 from his 17th birthday that his 18th birthday was going to happen. Just saying. Anyway, that's my rant over. I couldn't disagree more with people that say that Ben is being entitled.
Yeah, no, for once, I completely and utterly agree with you, Royfield.
No, you said for once you completely and utterly agree with me last week as well.
Okay, for twice, I completely and utterly agree with you, Robert.
Thank you. I've actually shot my bolt way too soon, really, because our next caller innera has a touch of the Merlins, actually. So, good people of Dumdy Dumland, just pretend like I haven't gone on like a 2-minute rant and you haven't heard that, because here is another caller innera of which I disagree with.
Good afternoon, Lucy, Royfield, and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's Margot from New Jersey. I'd like to firstly thank Witherspoon for inviting me to the next New York meetup. As I avoid social media, I'll reach out and good guess on my location, but I live just slightly outside of the capital of Trenton. Emma and Ed are finally heading to divorce. It didn't appear that either of these two were really interested in putting the work into their relationship in an attempt to fix it. Although this could be a setup by the writers for a grand rekindling, I do hope the two go their separate way and instead are a visible example of a successful co-parenting relationship in Ambridge, instead of having one half of the parental unit mysteriously disappearing. Why does Ben need a car purchased for him? I understand Ruth and David did purchase cars for their other two children, but they have put forth a lot of money into the hope of hosting events at Brookfield. But cars are expensive, as is all the other stuff that goes along with it. Trips to the mechanic, insurance. Cars are a really extravagant gift and maybe shouldn't be a gift at all. And instead, let it be a lesson for Ben in saving his money and budgeting. I'm glad that Linda did finally attempt to apologize to Freddie, but it's sad that he wasn't able to listen to her in that moment. I don't know how she's going to fix their working relationship, but I do hope that Freddie is given a chance to prove himself in a promotion of some sort at Grey Gables. Our ex-convict needs a second chance to prove himself successful. Tom lost his wedding ring. What will No Kasha think? I'm rather looking forward to him not finding it, just to see how it plays out. That's all from me this week. May you have a lovely week, and don't forget to buy some hand sanitizer.
Thank you, Margot. I believe that Freddie may well find a way to redeem himself this week. That is all I am saying. Thanking you. Also, you've got to remember that Ed dumped Emma, and Emma was never quite sure why he dumped her. She didn't really understand, apart from he was saying, I'm just not good enough. And that was as much as he could get. That was as far as he could get. If someone's dumped you, you don't want to follow them round and weeping and saying, but what did I do? What did I do? What did I do? So I think it wasn't that they didn't work at it. They just didn't understand. They were both too reticent and both too kind of confused and hurt to actually go there. If one party's had an affair, then you can sit down and talk about it and da 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 da. But well, when it's just kind of
generally loose, you don't talk. It's a lot of shouting that goes on. Then
you hit each other or whatever. But yeah,
but you are right though. It gives you a much easier in.
There's a thing when it's just I'm not good enough. When it's just I'm not good enough for you. Yes, you are. No, I'm not. That's it. You're just stuck. There's nowhere really you can go. I don't think as well that I don't know where Trenton is, so I don't know how busy that area is or what sort of place that is. But I am telling you that when I was brought up in the country, and when you are 18, having a car is like a lifeline. There is no, and I'm not kidding, no, where my mum lives, there is so, the public transport is unbelievably restricted. It's like one bus in the morning, one bus out in the afternoon. That's it. You cannot walk because there are no pavements, because it's all A roads. You can't walk anywhere safely at night. There's no Uber. There's no anything like that. There are minicabs that cost a fortune, way more expensive than having your own old banger car. When you are on a farm, you can put the car on the farm insurance. So that brings the cost down. I don't think yes, it is an extravagant gift in the big scheme of things, but for an 18-year-old living in the country, you know, you can't get to work. You rely on lifts from other people constantly, and it's awful. So I really do sympathize with him. And, you know, it would be different if the other two hadn't had cars and he just went, I want a car. But the fact that they have, and it was sort of like, wait, it's my turn. And then they're like, no. So, yes, I disagree with you, Margot.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
And I second that. It's one of the consequences of deregulation of public transport in the 80s. One of the consequences has subsequently been that you've had more young people having to leave rural Britain because they can't get to work. There aren't the job opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, the two things are inextricably linked. And I must admit, I hadn't thought about it in that way, how isolating it can actually be if you're a young person and you physically just can't get around, because I grew up in the city. But as I said, it just goes to underline that here's his attitude privileged. You could argue that it is. But actually, situationally, and then through the dynamics of the family, is every right to be pissed. And all I can hope is that this is some kind of wheeze, that they're just kind of gently winding him up, really. And he's going to have like a good, you know, second-hand car, you know, there for his birthday. Yeah. Because they
can just get Josh to nick him one, it'd be fine.
True that. Anyway, so that was somebody in New Jersey, in Trenton. Famous battle in Trenton in the American War of Independence. I think we beat them. Think we did.
Of course we did.
Or ultimately we lost, though, Luce. Or I think the Battle of Trenton might be the only battle that George Washington won. There's something about the Battle of Trenton. I think it's the only... George Washington, right? Not even a little known fact, but Americans whisper this. It was actually, in battle, a bad general. George Washington, good at retreating. If you ever want to retreat, keep your army together. You get he's your man, right? Him there with his wooden teeth. He's your man, right? You want to win a battle, you don't call him. Yorktown, where the British surrendered, George Washington, nowhere near. All the battles, with the significant battles which America wins in the War of Independence, George Washington, nowhere near, apart from maybe Trenton. Somebody's probably going to call in next week and tell me I'm wrong about the Battle of Trenton, but not about George Washington's competence about winning battles. Anyway, moving swiftly on, here's somebody with a chip on his shoulder. It's Trev, and he's married to Babs.
Hello, Royfield, Lucy, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world.
Babs and Trev here. Babs, I really enjoyed last week's show, but you got a shock, didn't you?
I did, Trev. Royfield, small island shaming of St. Lucia.
Yep.
So unexpected. That's
me. I laughed when I heard it and got some very funny looks on the tube.
Nothing new there.
Yeah, Babs. See, everyone with a Caribbean heritage is familiar with the small island jibe. It probably inspired the title of Andrea Levy's book of the same name, where, ironically, the small island referred to was Jamaica in comparison to Britain. Island size is relative, after all.
This is all a bit weird. Only in the UK could two black guys be comparing island sizes on a podcast about the Archers.
Indeed. Royfield, mate, we love you, but to borrow a phrase from another podcaster, you're better than that. I'm not going to malign the wonderful island peoples and achievements of Jamaica. In return, I'm better than that. I'll even concede that a podcast called How St. Lucia Conquered the World would be very short. Mm-hmm. What I will say, in praise of the simply beautiful St. Lucia, Helen of the West Indies, is that although small, she is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and not one, but two, count them two, Nobel Prize winners. This means Saint Lucie Belle Pays holds the accolade of most Nobel Prize laureates per capita in the world. How's that for culture, Royfield? Mic drop, I think.
Okay, enough now. Let's get back on topic.
Yes, let's. I thought this week was, to borrow Douglas Adams' description of Earth, mostly harmless. Johnny fessed up about his hair supplements. Linda tried to perform an act of contrition on Freddie, who was having none of it. And Tom couldn't find his ring piece with both hands.
For me, I always admire those clever Dumpty Dummers who share their expertise. Well, I used to be a graphic designer, and I can confidently state that it takes more than a typographical treatment to rebrand a business. I also know about cocktails because I've drunk a lot of them. Peach schnapps, tequila and cranberry. Oh, it's just wrong.
Well, that's all from us.
Love and hugs to all.
Bye.
Right.
Before you start, I have to go at 6:15. Okay? So let's take a deep breath.
This is going to be.
And let it all go.
Now, nice to know that he listens to the 606 podcast with the great Chris Sutton, who was once a striker for Birmingham City in the mid-noughts. So yes, you're better than that is Chris Sutton. So we listen to the same podcast. However, there is absolutely
good.
No
so we're
way.
All friends out of this to talk about. Excellent. Next caller.
No.
I am go. Okay.
Number one. We have influenced global civil rights through deed, through music, and through action like no other country, right? Arguably, 20th century civil rights starts with Marcus Garvey, a Jamaican who goes to New York and creates the seed that will give us people like Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, etc., etc. in the 60s. He raised up the consciousness of black people who always thought up until that point that we were second-class citizens of the world and that was our place. A son of the island of Jamaica. The third most successful country in the realm of popular music. First comes the United States, second comes the United Kingdom, third, the small island of Jamaica. Population of the United States, 340 million. Population of the United Kingdom, 65 million. Population of the island of Jamaica, 2.7 million. Thirdly,
are we done?
Thirdly,
oh.
The island of Jamaica has spawned one of the most influential sects of Christianity, which doesn't go around shooting people, doing weird things and knocking on people's doors unexpected at all hours of the day. Rastafarianism comes out of the island of Jamaica. Right. I give you Cool DJ Herc. Without the island of Jamaica, there'd be no hip-hop. A Jamaican immigrant goes off in 1968 to the Bronx in New York, and he goes to parties and he tries to play his reggae music to these unsuspecting Americans, and they go, we're not having that. So he talks on the mic over soul and funk records. It becomes hip-hop. How many gold medals has the island of St. Lucia won in the Olympics, Lucy? I'll tell you, none ever. We've had 23 from a population of 2.7 million people, which means per head of the population, the island of Jamaica is the most successful Olympic nation ever. Period. End of. Full stop. Move on. Goodbye.
Oh, yes, I know. Yes, I know. Yes, I know now.
Yes, I did.
Or did I make that up?
No, okay. I did. All right. You really are moving on, aren't you?
I am. Because good. I have to go. Yes.
Hello, this is Carolyn in Yorkshire, in Leeds. I'm the person who suggested we organise a meet-up.
Oh, hello.
So what I'm looking for right now is expressions of interest from anybody who lives in this part of the world. I'll put messages on the various social media sites. If you're not on social media, then perhaps Royfield might you pass any expressions on to me.
I will do,
we'll
love.
Find out where everybody lives, and then we'll look for a mutually convenient place and time. So as I'm now not a non-caller-innerer, I need to go through the gears. So here I am. I'm in Leeds. I work for a children's charity. When I was a child, my mum had Radio 4 on at all times in the kitchen until the Archers came on, because she couldn't stand the Archers. So the first drum would sound and she'd be off across the kitchen. By the second drum, it'd be turned off. So Dad and I had to listen to the Archers when it was on in the car, when she wasn't there to stop us. So I don't really know what my first character is. My first storyline that I clearly remember is that Clary got engaged to Eddie and Jethro was really upset. And I also remember Elizabeth returning from school around about that time. So maybe my first character might be Mrs. Antrobus, the dog lady. Not sure, and not being able to calculate it. So then I had 25 years where I hardly listened at all. I've had all those kids to bring up and work to go to and things. But recently, when the Helen coercive control story came up, I started listening again. And you know what? You can have 25 years off and not very much has changed. Although I can remember saying, where's Nigel gone? And who's this jazzer fella? But on the whole, I could follow what was going on. And then my lovely colleague, Michelle, told me all about Dumpty Dum. And now I'm hooked. It's a big joy every week to listen to you both, and I can't get into Dumpty Dum. So you record the longest shows you like. That's fine by me. And thank you to Michelle for putting me in contact with you all. So once again, get in touch if you'd like to meet up in the Leeds area. It'd be really nice to meet everybody. And thank you big time, Lucy and Roy Field, for all that you do for this community. Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Just
thank you, Michelle, yeah. Whoever you are, for oh, yes, introducing that Michelle. Lovely Carolyn.
Yes. It's Andrew Disbury. He wants to hook up and get dumdy dumming with you in Leeds. I'll just give a little bit of advice when it comes to doing meetups. Just decide on a day and stick to it. And just decide on a place and just stick to it. That's my gut here. So, Andrew and Carolyn, I'm going to get you guys together on the emails. And then you just say, right, you pick a Saturday, you pick a Friday evening after work, whatever the heck it is. And you go, bang, that's what it is. And you decide on that date. And trust me, they will come. They'll be flocking in their droves to the corn market or whatever, wherever the hell you decide to have it up there in Leeds. And I love Leeds and I miss Leeds a lot. And I went there for college and I just love Leeds. I miss it a lot. Anyway, wish I could be with you. Also, I won't be able to be with you, but I wish I could. Lucy.
Also, Carolyn, you are the first person I've ever come across whose mother didn't listen.
Yes.
And because everyone says, my mother always listened and it was on in the kitchen. Da, 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 da. You're the first person whose mother actually turned it off. So I think you win some sort of special award for this. I don't quite know what, but anyway. We have two emails. Can I do them quickly?
Yes, please.
One is from Mark Atkins. Mm-hmm. Who says, Lieber Lucy and Royfield, as a long-time listener to Dumpty Dum and as a recently naturalized Staatsbürger, you can tell Royfield he is not going to be arrested for singing the first verse of Das Deutschlandlied, nor the second, which is about German wine and German women. The third verse is only sung by convention, and the first two verses are not banned by any German law. The melody composed by Haydn was also used by the Austro-Hungarian Empire up to 1918 with different lyrics. Then it was called the Kaiserlied and dedicated to the Emperor Franz Joseph. Hope this clears things up. Anyway, Royfield could always sing the pre-1919 German national anthem, Heil dir im Siegerkranz, which has the same tune as God Save the Queen, so even he shouldn't cock that one up. He says, Grüße aus Heidelberg, Mark. Thank you very much, Mark.
I think, right, so we did receive an email after I sang Deutschland, Uber Alles. We did receive an email. It has to be said, this person wasn't German, and I think that maybe, because of history, us non-Germans have... We're very sensitive to any display of German nationality. And maybe in this respect, you know, you Germans and people who actually live in Germany are a little bit more relaxed about it. But after I got the email saying, dude, you can't be doing that, I did do a wiki. And the Wikipedia did say the West German government stopped singing it in 1952. So it's not... There is the law, there's the convention, there's people's sensibilities, and they all can be somewhat mushy. But you read it in black and white, and as of 1952, because the Nazis were so fervent with saying that Deutschland, Deutschland über alles means Germany, Germany above all nations, which is not the way it was first written. It was written pre 1848, when Germany was a collection of some 30 odd different statelets, and it meant we need to have a Germany above all else. So the Nazis did corrupt it, but you understand that there is the national sensibility, there is the political sensibility about singing it, and then there is people just being somewhat relaxed. But reading it in black and white, and if you're a Brit, you go, oh god, no. Right. So anyway, but one of the lovely things which has come out of it is that we have some of our lovely Iris's music at the end of this week's show. So there you go. That's our reparations for me putting my foot into German national hymn singing sensibilities and just like getting it slightly wrong. Anyway, another email.
We've had another email from lovely Michael Rowan, who looked after me so splendiferously last week. And I won't read it. He said nice things about me, which I won't read out. Oh. But the bit at the end is funny. He said, not sure if a first-time writer-innerer needs to answer the questions in the same way as the first-time caller-innerer. But just in case, I am a Will Grundy, yay, lucky me, as I started listening in 1983. On last week's Dumpty Dum, Lucy very kindly offered me a job as her celebrity liaison person, which I'm very happy to accept. As Lucy didn't mention the salary when she made the job offer, I have given it some thought and would like to suggest £40 or £50 per hour. If this is not acceptable, I can probably stretch to 60, but that has to be my final offer. Thank you very much, Michael. That's very sweet. And thank you again for looking after me so nicely.
Smashing. Nothing is decided, folks, but there might be a conjoining, a commingling next year of various Archer's fan events. So nothing's confirmed, not putting the cart before the horse, but you never know. You never know. You never know. Right, so that's the end of the emails. Now we're going to press a button and have an advert followed by a touch of Millie Bell.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Good day, everyone. Well, I'd like to concentrate on three of our discussions this week. One of them was incredibly popular, but the first one is about Ed and Emma, whether they came close to a rapprochement. Or, I said that with my Linda voice, by the way, or were we being over-optimistic? But Barb Danielson said, I hope they get back together. And Lynwyn Davison said, I thought Emma was excellent. Her voice was kind of near to tears, very realistic. Elizabeth Emerson said, why doesn't one of them say something? Clary or Susan or even the sainted Tracy would surely act as emissary. Emma is proud but miserable, and poor Eddie's just crushed. Scriptwriters, it's time to resolve this. Francesca Dimick said their breakup was so weird to me. I don't know if I always go out with drama queens or what, but my breakup seemed to go through weeks of arming and ahhing before the nail goes in the coffin. This was one conversation. Seems bizarre to me after years of marriage and kids. I absolutely agree with you, Francesca. It did seem a little abrupt. But then it was at a dramatic time for Emma, wasn't it? And Elizabeth Byrne said, the sooner the better. Perhaps Ed will save Emma from a dragon or something. I thought maybe too much Walt Disney there. The next discussion was so popular, and it was around whether Ruth and David should feel obliged to buy Ben a car. And I must admit, I was so surprised by Pip advocating on behalf of Ben, but mainly because I thought she must realise what the finances of the farm are and that things change. And that doesn't mean you might say, for example, you can't have a car now because we can't afford it, but we realise that down the track this is something that we would have to do because we did it for the others. Anyway, Joda Bank said, although expecting a car is bratty and privileged, if you did it for the first two, you really should for the third, I think, or it's grossly unfair. I mean, they've known for 18 years when this day was coming, so they could have planned. Lynn Griffith said, the way they're treating Ben is setting them up for future conflict and resentment. particularly as they have spent a lot of money on the barn without apparently considering the fact that their youngest child will shortly be 18. What is odd is that both of them seem to have almost forgotten about the forthcoming birthday and not planned for it. As the youngest of three siblings, I can sympathise with Ben, as to him it will seem most unfair that the others have been treated differently and he will not forget it. And I do agree with you, Lynn, but I also think that they were investing in the future finances of the farm when they did the barn. I'm not sure that it's fair to buy a birthday present before you invest in your business. I mean, that's just my opinion. Christine Coulson said, can argue both sides to this, but it's a yes from me. You can't do it for the first two and not for the third. Especially, although I can't think of any examples where this did happen at Brookfield, if they have pulled the, your sibling didn't get that, do that at your age. Meg Del Atana said, yes, in general, I would say no, because nobody should expect a car, but they got themselves into this stupid position to give child A and child B a car or whatever big gesture, and then not to do the same for child C is inexcusable and basically asking for a justified lifetime of resentment. Lots more than that. That really was an incredibly popular post, and lots of people got involved, which I love. So thank you, thank you, thank you. The last one that I wanted to share with you was just a discussion after the Saturday episode. We said that it was very interesting to hear Oliver demonstrating excellent leadership skills under pressure. And also Philip was really accommodating about the emergency needs of the local business, Great Gables. And we asked the question, is this the Archers at its very best and a relief from Brexit and coronavirus? Or we asked, do you prefer the episodes with a bit of drama? KJ Johansson said, I thought most of the episode I heard, which wasn't all, was tripe. I don't care about Tom's baked ring. And who on earth owns a metal detector? Actually, some people replied and said they owned a metal detector. But anyway, Matthew Penny said, I thought Freddie's demolition of Linda was brilliantly written. Jean Bell said, I guess all this goodwill and cooperation is leading us up the garden path towards a load of drama. Judith Lawrence said, I prefer this, though I prefer more those with even less drama. What's happening in the WI and Knit and Natter and the book club and the cider club? And with the bell ringers, what is Bert planting towards the flower and produce show? How are the plans for the May Fair going? Why haven't we heard more about the Lent appeal? Janina Kraski said, yep, definitely prefer these kinds of episodes. And Rosalind Drew Crow said, so prefer the gentle stuff, thank you. There was definitely a range of opinions there. And so it was another great week for us, so thank you very, very much. We are gradually growing in the number of people who follow our page. We're just shy of 2,800. So thank you to everybody who is following us and who is recommending us to friends. And we welcome all new people to Facebook and to Dumpty Dum, of course. And that's me for the moment. So next week, you will be in the capable hands of Yokel Bear. Until I speak to you in a fortnight, I say to you, hooroo.
Thank you for that, Millie Bell. That was most awesome.
Thank you.
Lucy, Mirror Headlines. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you to I'm now getting so many of these. It's everybody in the world is sending me headlines. Okay. Pig starts farm fire.
Did you get one from Donald Trump?
Yes. Listen to me. Pig really? Starts farm fire by... Royfield!
You didn't get one from Donald Trump.
No, ergo, I didn't do it.
Wasn't everybody in the world. Just
do you
saying.
Want me to do this or not?
Yes, please.
Pig starts farm fire by excreting pedometer.
I did see that one.
Everybody saw that one. This was from the Yorkshire Press, something press, anyway, and it looks like somewhere in Yorkshire. Man armed himself with pickaxe during row at wake. And this one is my... the mind boggles at that, I tell you. This is my favourite. This was sent by Auntie Jean. Mother of woman who bit airline pilot blames Hitler. Right, do you want tweets for me?
Oh,
now?
Yes, please, Lucy.
Ginger Beans. We need a topical insert about the run-on bog roll at the village shop. Maybe Linda and Lillian's feud could escalate over the last four-pack of Andrex with Sergeant Carpet having to taser them both. Mr. Snodes, I hope they're not overblowing the introduction again. Emma's decision better be bigger than fish fingers or turkey dinosaurs. Patricia Plonska was live tweeting the academic archers, and was talking about the sort of the roundup at the end of the omnibus last week, and everyone was saying apparently good turnout, very, yes. Kerry Davis used up his entire allowance of character appearances. It's like Weight Watchers. He's rolling over his weekly points for Little Xander. Monday's episode will just be Jim doing a soliloquy. I'd quite like that. Peggy Woolley, fair play to Kathy Perks and Usha. They've been self-isolating for the past 8 years. Hashtag coronavirus. And
this tweet of the week.
Yep. Exeter Ooh. Dormouse.
1 minute, that's the wrong one. Bloody hell. But alright.
Again.
yes.
It was the wrong one exactly this time last right. week, I
Sorry,
seem to believe.
Lucy, is this tweet of the week?
Yes, it is, Royfield.
There you go. You can talk over it, you know.
Okay, I know, I always feel a bit embarrassed. Ruth, you've got a point, Ben. We gave Pip a car for her 18th. We gave Josh a car for his 18th. So I can see why you might think we'd give you a car for your 18th, Ben. So, Ruth, to be honest, you were in your room for 16 years and we forgot you existed. No offence. Thank you, Exeter Dormouse.
Right, we've got 10 minutes. DumDidum.com, go there. It's got a shop. It's got awesome things you can do. You can buy mugs, T-shirts, caps, hats, underwear that say DumDidum, DumDibum, and DumDT, and all manner of great things. Patreon.com, go there. You can help us to keep the lights on around here at DumDidum Towers by going on to Patreon.com and giving us $2 per show. You actually have some content this week coming your way, which is our Lucy's year in Ambridge, which she delivered this to the academic archers. It was a great kind of after dinner thing that our Lucy did, and everybody gave her a rip roaring round of applause and high fived her and kind of like just like fist bumped her, and it was awesome because she's funny like that. So if you want to pretend that you were at the Academic Archers, if you want to relive that moment, if you want to go back in time to a week last Saturday, you can do that if you're a member of Patreon, because you'll get exclusive content. Only you, not the riffraff that just like download the podcast, never contribute at all, just listen to it, giggle away, and then just don't support us. But if you put your hand in your pocket, you get the good stuff. You get Lucy and her monologue, which is exclusive, right? So that's patreon.com. Do you want to read something else out now?
Yes, I'm never on the right bit, am I? Ever, ever. Remember, to get in contact with us, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website, or you can call 0203 031 3105 to leave us a message.
Can I just quickly jump in? And there's also yes. this.
Well, hello, Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Nicholas Barnes from Vitel here. We're the company that provides, for absolutely no recompense at all, the telephone number you can call in and leave a message on. I just wanted to share with you a new feature we've added. You can now use the same telephone number to record a Dumpty Dum for the beginning of the show. It's clever, it's cool, and all the hip kids are doing it. Simply call 0203 031 3105 and follow the prompts. You'll hear my dulcet tones guiding you through the whole thing. And when it comes to record the Dumpty Dum, you'll hear it in your ear while you're singing, humming, instrumenting, or, well, however you're performing it yourself. It's that easy. Oh, and it can be anonymous too. Nobody has to know it's you. Go on, give it a try. 0203 031 3105.
He's got a lovely voice.
He has.
Like I said to him, does he want to do my role? Because like he sounded really quite very. Well, we sort of sounded like that. Anyway, as you were rattling through things.
Yes, we finished, haven't we?
No, because we haven't done Twitter. You won't do Facebook, so I've got to do Facebook.
Oh yes, okay. So you can find Yoko Bear at Dumpty Dum, which is at Dumpty Dum. I am at Lucy V. Freeman, and Royfield is at
Royfield. And if you don't fancy the Twitters because you see it as like a bit too hard and loose for you and whatever, and you like things a little bit more sedate, maybe you like Facebook. You can go onto Facebook and you can type in Dum De Dum and have a bit of Facebook via Dum De Dum. So do that. And that's just about the end of the show. You've got to run somewhere in approximately 7 minutes. Where are you going?
I've just got to take my daughter to work.
Oh, well, where does she work?
She's a lifeguard at the David Lloyd gym.
Crumbs. Awesome responsibility. Does she wear a red bathing suit?
She does. And she did a week's intensive training. Mm-hmm. And now she tells me that her entire job consists of buzzing through a walkie-talkie and saying, "Matt, someone's been sick again in the pool." That's it. That's what she does. That's why she earns the big money. And he has to come along with a net and catch the sick in a net. Ooh. and then filter it all. And it's all appalling.
Eesh.
Yes.
Eesh. Mm. Well, I don't know what to tell you. What have you learnt from this week's episode of Dum De Dum, Lucy?
Well, I learnt a lot about the German national anthem.
Mm-hmm.
I learnt that Trevor will rue the day he ever mentioned gluten on this podcast.
Well, you know, just don't try and out-Ireland me. That's the thing.
Okay.
Because I've got that, like, done.
Yeah.
I've done 26 episodes out-isling in everybody. So don't even try it.
Can I just...
Go on.
The same thing happened to me this morning. Somebody tried to mansplain the Archers to me.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not going to say who, because... But I honestly thought... I said Gay Grables, and they said, "Actually, I think it's Grey Gables." And I just... I didn't know whether to laugh or rush across the room and strangle them. So, anyway. Yes.
By the way,
I just said, "I know." Yes.
Can I just say, I know St. Lucia is a wonderful and beautiful island, and I have.
Royfield Brown reversing.
Well, the thing is, you know, it's small. You know, it hasn't really offended anybody. It's just there doing its thing, a little pebble in the Eastern Caribbean. But considering it's such a small but beautiful island, you know, it does have a unique place in world history because it's the only officially Francophone country which is part of the Commonwealth, and ditto the only English-speaking country which is part of the official Francophone world. It used to be a French colony before the British came and nabbed it in the early 19th century. So there is this French Creole patois which is spoken there, though English is the official language. And Maisha, my daughter, is half St. Lucian, so I can't slag it off that much. There you go.
Good.
There you go. There you go. Hands across the Caribbean. Jamaicans, yes, and St. Lucians hugging, yes, each other in bonhomie, brotherly love.
Yes, and
love.
Hands across the David Lloyd gym, which is where I need to be. So
well, tell you what, you go, you do your thing.
Okay.
I'm going to end this episode by saying, you've had St. Lucia, you've had Jamaica, you've had Ambridge /England. Now it's back to Germany. It's Munster. It's our Irish and rockabilly hippie... What are they? Folk ensemble. This track is entitled Hibernation. And trust me, folks, this will not put you to sleep. Thank you all.
Bye.
Schlafe. haben uns gern und viel gesehen. Jetzt möchte ich gerne wieder gehen. Ich meld mich ganz gewiss, wenn wieder Frühjahr ist. Nimm das nicht übel, ich seh kein Licht. Die Kraft der Sonne erreicht mich nicht. Lass mich jetzt schlafen. Spätestens Mai bin ich dann wieder da.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.